the 12th chapter of Revelation. We left off on Israel in the tribulation. Anyone who can't see that Revelation 4 through 19 is Israelitish. They fill the whole scene. Jerusalem is the city. Israel is the people. Various saved groups in Israel. We have really four of them in this text. And there are seven we take later on in the tribulation period. The battle of Gog and Magog will be fought on the mountains of Palestine. The battle of Armageddon will be fought against the city of Jerusalem. Christ's feet will stand on the Mount of Olives when he comes back. It is Palestine, Jerusalem, the temple rebuilt in Jerusalem. Christ returned to Jerusalem. You'll see this woman that flees to the mountains. Very unique. In her position. Starting again with about the third verse for background. The woman is Israel. The nation of Israel. With the glory of Christ and of the oracles of God, her primary glory of the crown and the rainbow and the 12 stars under her feet. When you go back to, again, to Genesis 37 and see Joseph's dream, you'll see a lot of the things reiterated as far as the glory of Israel. Verse 3, and there appeared another sign in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, he's called great here twice, having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his heads, and his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and it cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman which was ready to be delivered, and to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child. You've already seen this is Jesus. Who was about to rule all nations with a rod of iron. This takes you back to Psalms 2:9. Forward to Revelation 19:18. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. That takes you back to 3:21. Where Jesus said, he that overcometh will I grant to sit with me upon my throne as I overcame and have sat down on my Father's throne. 3:21. That's where he is today. Still. On his Father's throne. He's not ruling the nations yet. Between this verse and the next verse, there's a hiatus of 2,000 years. A hiatus. A gap. Oh, how the post-tribs and all the rest laugh at us for the gap theory. As the young earth theorists criticize us for the gap theory of Genesis, between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. I still believe in it. I still believe in this gap here, too. They'll say, hey, wait a minute, Bragg. God's time clock doesn't have any gaps. It never stops. It doesn't. Jesus, in the 4th chapter of Luke, stood up in the synagogue, and they gave him the book to be read, and he turned to Isaiah 61:1, and he began to read, the Spirit of the Lord God's upon me. And then he went on down to preach liberty to the captives, and open the prison to them that are bound, the acceptable year of the Lord, and he closed the book on a comma 2,000 years long. For if he had given the rest of the verse, the day of vengeance of our God, he couldn't have said, this day is this scripture fulfilled in your ears. Anyone who doesn't believe that there's a gap between the 69th week of Daniel 9 and the 70th week of 2,000 years, the same gap, has all kinds of trouble trying to terminate that last week. They have it in the destruction of the temple under Titus in 70 A.D. Let me tell you something. When Titus destroyed the temple in 70 A.D., their so-called week after the crucifixion, the sun, moon, and stars weren't affected. Neither was the seven things in Daniel 9 fulfilled. The bringing in of everlasting righteousness. And to anoint the most holy place. To make an end of sin and all those seven things. It's foolishness. Daniel's last week has never started yet. When God cut off the tame branch to graft in the wild olive branch of the Gentiles, cutting off Israel, there at Calvary, God's 70 weeks stopped on the 69th week. You'll see, this is where we get that 42 months and 1,260 days and a time, times, and a dividing of times and 3.5 years, 7 years. It's all nonsense. These figures here are all nonsense, these 42 months and 42 months and 1,260 days and 3.5 years. But as soon as you begin to put Daniel's equation in here, and realize that that last week can't start as long as the church is on earth. The wild olive branch is grafted into the stem. But as soon as that wild olive branch is raptured out to be with Jesus Christ, God's great chronicle of time in Daniel's 70th week starts. We'll see this. We'll take it up in detail a little later because it's so important. There's a gap here. Make up your mind to it. When Jesus Christ, the man-child, was caught up into heaven and to the Father's throne, the partial raptures use this. Boy, have they got the time element all wrong. You and I are not caught up to the throne before Christ gets his. And he doesn't get his here until later. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared. Underscore that, place prepared. Where she hath a place prepared of God, miraculously. It's going to take that to protect her. That they should feed her there, here it is, 1,260 days. 1,260 days, or 42 months, or 3.5 years. I want you to notice he gives times and dividing of times in when he refers to this over in verses 13 and 14 and 15. I'm going to give those right now, because they're necessary. Look at verse 13. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman. That's Israel. And the Greek is very emphatic. That very woman that he mentioned in the first verse, which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings as of a gray eagle. Remember, this, there are signs in this chapter. Symbols. I know that, bless his heart, I love him. He gives some wonderful stuff, but Dr. Ivor Powell in 1980 said that these were those F-15 fighters that we sent over to the Arabian countries to protect them. That's not the eagles. These are the same eagles that are in the 19th chapter and the 4th verse of Exodus. When God led Israel out of Egypt the first time, he said, I bore you on eagle's wings. All it means is God's miraculous speed and protection. As he carries them miraculously, I don't know how they're going to get there with the Antichrist around the city and all the rest. Remember the two great invasions of the Antichrist to Palestine. Don't ever lose sight of the two. One's in the 17th chapter of Luke, and the other's in the 21st. In Luke 17, he said, when ye shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, flee to the mountains, the same thing. Flee to the mountains. For then shall be a time of trouble such as never was since it was a nation, or ever will be again. Did you know a lot of believing Jews will obey God and flee to the mountains? They've got to get through these armies, for one thing. Israel is compassed with armies. They've got to flee to one or two places, to my mind. Sinai would be one, but that's about 200 miles away. Too far. But God does mention in the Battle of Gog and Magog that Edom will not be in on it. Well, now, Edom, the country of Edom is in the mountains of Seir, going down south of the Dead Sea in a kind of an arc where Petra is. And oh, I love this. W.E. Blackstone, bless his heart, a millionaire, precious man of God. He wrote Jesus is Coming. The book Jesus is Coming. Every believer ought to have his book Jesus is Coming. I cut my eye teeth on this when I was a lad. But, and I don't know when he lived. I never got to meet him anyhow. But W.E. Blackstone, the millionaire, bought millions of New Testaments, had them sealed in waterproof containers, and has hidden them around in the mountains of Seir, and especially around in the stronghold Petra, P-E-T-R-A, the rock. That shows his faith in literal prophecy and the fleeing of the mountains. I believe he's right. I don't know how they're going to be protected from airplanes, but you notice what it says? In a place prepared of God. The God who put their mountains there in the first place can hew them out of place if he wants to. With air conditioning and deep freezers and telephone. I don't know. You know what I mean? God's not limited. The God who made everything can make them a special place. It's going to be special. I don't think it's just something there now. But it's going to be a prepared place. Now you'll see why it's a prepared place here. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly. Now of course this is symbolical language. This chapter is. Remember that. Signs. All he's saying here is that, and these are not airplanes going to carry him down there. I don't know of any landing field in the mountains of Seir, or in the country all the way around it, the wilderness east of the mountains of Edom. But she is going to be miraculously led and transported by God. Now, the same God who took 3 million folks out of Egypt for 40 years in the wilderness, and fed them and took care of them and finally put them into Canaan to take care of these during the tribulation days. How big is your God? Into her place. Notice it was prepared place before. Now it's her place. Where she is nourished for 1 year, then 2 years, which makes 3, and then half a year. Time, times, and a dividing of times. That's the that is the 1260 days in the first part that we had. Here's the harmony of the prophetic word. It's wonderful. Here's the time, times, and the dividing of times of the book of Daniel, when the Antichrist is going into doing his whole thing. This is the time when Jesus said, when ye shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. You'll see that breaking of the covenant in the 9th chapter of Daniel. Putting his image up in the temple. Then flee to the mountains. Here's where they're doing. Now, not all. There's another great crowd that doesn't go. The 144,000 don't go. Neither does the remnant of the woman's seed go. They go all over the world preaching the gospel of the kingdom. We'll see them in the last verse. And now notice in verse 15. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood. Several times in the Bible you'll have this flood armies. I believe this is the Antichrist. He's already compassed the city with his armies. He set up his image. Now the woman that has escaped him, this remnant of the woman's seed, not the remnant of the woman's seed, but the remnant in the Old Testament, the faithful remnant, has fled to the mountains. You can well imagine this makes the old boy pretty mad, like the two witnesses do. And he tries his best to capture these escaped Jews. He sends out armies. Oh, I can give you a couple texts on armies as floods. As in Jeremiah 46, 7 and 8. 46, 7 and 8. 47, 2 and 3. There are many more where armies are likened unto a flood. After a woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. In other words, she is in a prepared place, miraculously fed, as in the first text we read, preserved of God from everything that the Antichrist can throw against her. Just believe it. Let me read a text out of a number that we could read in Isaiah 26:20. You should read the context. It's the little apocalypse of Isaiah. It's the same period of time. The shaking is there, the signs in the heavens, and the signs upon earth, and the consternation, and nature run amok, and then the salvation of Israel. But before they're saved, here is the woman in the wilderness, 26:20. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers. Here's another name for this place, thy chambers. The place prepared of God. Her place. Thy chambers. Enter thou into thy chambers. And shut the door. I like that shut door. That's the protection. And shut thy door. The door. About thee. Hide thyself as it were for a little moment. Until the indignation be overpast. 3.5 years are finished. And their Lord comes back and his feet stands upon the Mount of Olives. Then he'll open her door. Take her out of the chamber. Bring her back into Palestine. This is one of the saved remnants of Israel. Who will believe God. They'll believe their book of Daniel. When they see that abomination. Daniel mentions them twice, at least, this faithful remnant. I know we can use this for the church, but it doesn't belong to us. About those who turn many to righteousness shall shine as the stars. These are the tribulation Jewish saints in the last verse. He also mentions them in the 11th chapter, in the 33rd verse of Daniel. These remnants, but this is primarily this last verse. And the dragon was wroth with the woman. I can well imagine. He came down to earth having great wrath, for he knoweth his time is short. He sent the Antichrist against the land of Palestine to conquer the city of Jerusalem, and he's conquered it. And installed Satan's Christ over the whole earth. Now here are a bunch of Jews that escaped him. He saw them go. He knows where they are. And he figures it won't be much of a job to kill her. And he's powerless. But you see, there are some that didn't go there. They're God's evangelists in the tribulation period. Now, here are the preachers and evangelists in the tribulation period. Don't ever let anybody tell you the 144,000 are, or the woman in the wilderness. No, neither one of those. Not one word said about them witnessing. These are not Gentiles. The Gentiles will not be the preachers in the tribulation period. Boy, there are 100 texts for that. This one's the best one, though. It's the remnant of the woman's seed who are the evangelists in the tribulation period. The remnant of the woman's seed. They are going to succeed what you and I have failed to do in 2,000 years. The Gentile Church of Jesus Christ has not evangelized the whole world. And neither have we been promised that we would. I know they use it. I heard Oswald J. Smith quote it. I've heard many others quote it. This gospel of the kingdom must be preached to all the world for a witness, then shall the end come. In the first place, I've never preached the gospel of the kingdom. The only people I know doing it are Russellites and Herbert W. Armstrong and Anglo-Saxons or British Israelites. They're all preaching the wrong gospel. We don't preach the gospel of the kingdom. We preach the gospel of the grace of God. We evangelize or gospelize the whole world. How that Jesus Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures. That's what Paul said, the gospel whereby you're saved and that you received of me. Unless you received it in vain. But it will be the gospel of the kingdom. Now we'll see when we come to chapter 14 what the gospel of the kingdom is. An angel will preach it also. Around the earth. But the prime evangelist will be Jewish evangelists. It's not an accident that when you get a Jew saved, genuinely saved, he makes a lot better evangelist and missionary, and gospelizer than we ever hoped to. I thank God for every Jew that I've seen. I've heard several, and I've met others. I have also read after others. There's some that I have never heard personally, but I've read their sermons. And God is mightily using. They seem to have a fire and a zip about them like Paul had. And I believe, as I've said before, sincerely, that this is what Paul meant when he said, I was as one born out of due season. You know what he meant by that? He said, I was saved ahead of time. Can anyone just personally be saved before they ought to be saved? The answer is no. He must have a dispensational meaning to the text. I think Paul meant I should have been saved over in the tribulation period. I should have been a tribulation event. I may be wrong, but I certainly don't know what else he meant. I can't see how anybody can be saved out of season, if you mean by that before you ought to be saved, ahead of time. I was saved when I was about 6, and I should have been saved when I was 3 months old, as far as salvation is concerned. You can always be saved another day or two ahead of time. But, in other words, if that's what Paul meant. Do you think these tribulation saints will fail in their task like we have on ours? Paul covered the whole known world, didn't he? And if I'm right and the others are right about the fact that Paul had 2 imprisonments, he was released the first time and then went forth and covered the desired territory of Spain that he wanted to go and never was allowed to before. And probably England, and all through the north, even further north from the Roman Empire. For evidently there's about 2 to 3 years, and maybe some say even 5 years, between the first imprisonment and the second. You read Coney Baron Howes, and he'll give you quite a bit on this. And now there are a lot of them like Vincent and others who deny it, but I can't see anything else. There's so many contradictions if you don't have Paul released to preach again. But here's a man who said he made Christ fully known all the way from Illyricum to Jerusalem. Here's a man in a little over 30 years covered the whole known world. And everywhere where Paul's foot stopped down, he started a church practically. He got folks genuinely converted and established and in the faith and led them on into a victorious life to where the first thing you know, everybody touched them got saved. Even in Caesar's household. Well, if all of these tribulation evangelists preach in the power and spirit of Paul, like John the Baptist preached in the power and spirit of Elias, don't you think they'll do the job? They will preach the gospel of the kingdom to all the world for a witness. Then shall the end of the age take place that they asked for in the first part of that sermon on the Olivet Discourse. But here is the tremendous thing. Like, at least all but one, and there's doubts maybe that he might have been martyred. But we don't have his death, except by tradition, and some of those traditions are not very reliable. But remember tradition, not only later tradition, but most of the early church fathers, even the pre-Nicene fathers, tell us that all the apostles but John were martyred. Not many preachers kept their heads on. I started to say throughout all their life, but they did. Throughout all their life till it was chopped off. Did you know it costs a lot both to be a Christian and especially to be a preacher in the early church? Not many died a peaceful death. Most were martyred. Did you know that every one of these, it seems as though, is going to be martyred in the tribulation days? Probably without any exception. We had that in chapter 5, or 6 rather, in the fifth seal. Rest yet a little longer until your fellow servants also be slain as you were. Get that? And probably most saints, but I believe sincerely, every last one of these witnesses will be slain. Probably without an exception. Now, not until their ministry's through, like the two witnesses in chapter 11. But martyrdom will be the price. Now, if you don't believe it, you read every time when Jesus sent the 12 out and the 70 out. And you'll see that law of double reference again. You'll see that he prophesied things about them that they never fulfilled. Never did. One of them was, they shall prophesy before kings. When you should be brought before kings, he said, don't take any thought what you shall say, for it will be given to you in that very hour what you shall say. But the 12 never were brought really before kings like that. But the primary one there is in Matthew 10, I believe it's 32 if I remember rightly, where he says, ye will not have covered all the cities of Israel until the Son of Man become in power. He was already there when he said that, and when he sent the 12 out and the 70 out. What do you mean? He meant, I'm sending you out, but I'm going to send another crowd out in the last days, just before my return. And they will hardly have covered every city in Palestine until the Son of Man become in power. It shows you what he had primary reference to. He's going to send out with the power to do miracles, like the 70 and the 12 had. Even demons were subject unto them. They cast out demons. They did all kinds of miracles. Came back rejoicing, you remember? And then we had that other text in the 10th chapter of Luke that puts over in the future when he sees Satan as lightning fall from heaven. He evidently had them in mind. Now, come back to the text. Let's see this Titan battle in heaven. Why? This is probably a graphic, very graphic picture. I don't know if there's any more graphic than this, of these two, probably the greatest creatures God ever made, the highest creatures God ever made. One is an archangel and the other is a cherub. And their armies. Spiritual battles. How do you fight a spiritual battle in the heavenlies between spiritual creatures? I don't know. I don't know at all. But you know, I'll be there when this takes place. If you'll ask me then, I'll tell you. For I'll have already been raptured 3.5 years before this. This takes place in the middle of the tribulation period, when Satan is cast out of heaven. Every time out in the church when I teach this, I get a whole lot of static. People say, the devil in heaven, I thought he was in hell. Oh, no, no. It's made for him, according to Jesus, but he's not there yet. If you read the first 2 chapters of Job, you'll see that he does have access to heaven. And in fact, now he has access, he has to go. He has to give an account of his rulership. Remember, he is not absolute. He's the ruler of this world, Jesus said, but he's got to give an account. And when the sons of God, the rulers of God, come up before God to give an account of their rulership, Lucifer has to go too. But he also goes there for another reason. To accuse the brethren before God day and night, according to this text. It's in the genitive in the Greek, which means by day and by night. Very graphic. He's always saying to God, when God says, have you considered my servant Bragg? He'll say, yes, but have you considered him too? Have you seen this, that, and the other thing about Bragg? Remember I said it's a good thing if he has to lie about it. But woe be unto you when he's telling the truth. He can't say, contradict when God said, have you considered my servant Job that he's a righteous man and a just man and he hates evil? He couldn't say a word about that. He just said, well, he's serving you where to get out of it. That's a slander. That's what the word diabolus means. Let's look at this battle very briefly. And there was war in heaven. Michael, the archangel, the only one archangel in Jude 9, where he contested with him over the body of Moses. Here he's contesting with him over about the body of Israel. And his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels. And prevailed not, neither was their place found anymore. Get that anymore? It means he has now. Until this time, in the middle of the tribulation period. Anymore. In heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that ancient serpent, called Diabolus, the accuser, and Satan, the adversary. Boy, this word Satan here shows you also Israel in this time. For he's the great adversary of Israel. The first time the word Satan occurs is when he stands up against Israel in their numbering. To have David number them. That's the first time Satan occurs in the Bible. If you want the text, it's 1 Chronicles 21:1. But just in case, as we said, you don't know who he's talking about, which deceiveth the nations, the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now is come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down once and for all. It's Aorist. Which accused them, or used to accuse them, continual habitual action, before our God by day and by night. And then they overcame him in three different ways. These are the same brethren that he accuses. And they conquered him, dia, because of, on account of, first, the blood of the Lamb, naturally. They're under the blood. The blood's applied. They've washed their robes in the blood of the Lamb. So, first, the blood. Second, by means of the Word of God, or the Word of their testimony. That Word of their testimony is mentioned seven times in this book of Revelation. It has to do with their speaking with God. It is that homologia of the second chapter, the third chapter of the book of Hebrews. Here's the idea of talking with someone or agreeing with them. This is, of course, when they believe the record that God gave concerning his Son and said with him the one word. Homologia means to say the same thing. When they agree with his testimony, the testimony of Jesus, they conquered the enemy. And then third, and I love this one, let me give you the literal rendering. And they're not love of life, even unto death. They're not love of life, even unto death. In other words, you have to deny yourself if you want to conquer the enemy, even to us. You have to have this not love of life. All that goes with it. He comes first. Now I want you to notice two viewpoints. Rejoicing in heaven and woe on earth. From now on out. Remember, they had a wonderful time up to now. Whole earth had a wonderful time. Rider on the white horse is given peace and prosperity to the earth. Universal reign. I guess the world's having the best time it ever had since it fell. And all of a sudden, everything changes. And we see why it changes in the next chapter, the death and resurrection of the Antichrist. And he sets up the abomination of desolation. Satan is cast out of heaven, down to earth. Makes a difference. But notice, rejoicing in heaven, in the tent dwellers. Woe on earth among the permanent dwellers on the earth. Therefore rejoice, and by the way, it's where your treasures are. Rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that tabernacle in them. Woe to the earth dwellers, the permanent residents on earth. And of the sea, for the devil is gone down unto you having boiling rage. Thumos, not orge. T-H-U-M-O-S. Thumos. It always carries the idea of aroused wrath. And in him it would be boiling wrath, boiling rage. And see why? Because he well knows. It is emphatic, as Berkeley translates it. Well knows. He hath but a little season. He knows he has 3.5 years. He's a student of Daniel. No wonder then he persecutes God's kids. The devil has great wrath, for he knoweth his time is short. He knows that those that he hath slain have become victorious. Oh, I can think of a dozen reasons why the devil's mad. The devil doesn't like God's kids any more than he does God and God's Son. Here is why he hates even more. He hates all mankind made in the image of God. But more so, he hates God's kids. The devil would destroy you today if God turned him loose. If he didn't protect you like he did Job. I'm glad that the devil can't do a thing in the world in my life till he gets God's permission. But here's why I say I hope the Lord doesn't have as much confidence in me as he did in Job. Turn him loose on me. But it is a great comfort. Precious comfort in these evil days. When evildoers wax worse and worse. You read of killings and murder and torture, and they can't get mean enough. They're the devil's kids, and they're doing the works of their father, the murderer, from the beginning. And I am as sure of anything in the world that if God wasn't protecting me, I wouldn't last 10 minutes. But I'm so glad that my life is hid with Christ in God. So he's got to go through both of them to get to me. Lord bless you. You're dismissed.